if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers, bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed it is. And good morning to you. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are underway on this Tuesday, the 13th morning of the fourth month of the year of our Lord, 2021. We have a very, very important show today, in addition to being a very packed show today. Coming up at 9:35 this morning, we are going to talk with former U.S. Senate candidate and now current U.S. Senate candidate, Mike Gibbons. He has promised to give me the very first interview. Live interview after making his announcement that he is running for the seat currently occupied by Rob Portman, and he's going to deliver on that. It was announced this morning about an hour ago that Mike Gibbons is indeed running for Senate. He, of course, you recall, ran against Jim Renacci in the primary for Sherrod Brown's seat a couple of years ago. Now that Portman is not running for re-election, he is running for the Republican-held seat in a very crowded field. Mike Gibbons will talk to us about his decision and his vision coming up at 9:35. Then at 10:10, we talk about the gun grab. The gun grab that Joe Biden is undertaking right now, which will only and assuredly get worse and get stronger after another school-involved shooting that left a police officer and a student dead in Knoxville, Tennessee. So the gun grab is on, and AWR Hawkins from Breitbart News is going to be joining us at 10:10 to talk about that. You may notice that I said at 10:10 we would not have Peter Kersenow, or you may notice that I did not say his name. Peter is on assignment today, meaning he's got some very important legal work to do. He's going to be on with us later this week. So no Kersenow today, but trust me, we are loaded for bear for you. Before we get started on the top news of the day, let's pause for our daily Pledge of Allegiance. All right, where's our Pledge of Allegiance? We're looking for our Pledge of Allegiance. Let's try to find our Pledge of Allegiance. Here we go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I had somebody come up to me last night and said the best thing that I do on the air every day is make sure to give everyone the opportunity to say that Pledge of Allegiance. Last night I spoke at the Strongsville GOP Club, Strongsville Republican Party, held their meeting last night. Around 350, 360, 370 people showed up at the Brew Garden in Strongsville, and I was really, really amazed by the turnout and by the extraordinary passion that the people in Strongsville, or the people who were there at the Strongsville Club or Strongsville Republican Party meeting, showed to what we were talking about. They are ready to fight for this country. They're ready to defend it against the attack of the Marxists that live within it. I was really, really impressed. And I want to thank Shannon Burns and everybody else associated with the club. And, of course, everybody who attended. But somebody came up to me and said, Bob, every day when you play that Pledge of Allegiance when I'm driving, I put my hand on my heart. And I love that. I'm picturing that in my mind's eye. It's a mental image that gives me great pride. And I hope there are thousands of people all throughout Greater Cleveland whenever they hear that doing the exact same thing. So thank you for that testimonial to the gentleman last night. All right, we're going to start this morning in an obvious place because of what is going on in Minnesota right now. I have not talked in depth about the war on police in a while. It's been a while since we've discussed this, and we need to discuss it now because of what happened in the terrible, tragic shooting of a 20-year-old who was pulled over for a traffic stop and who decided not to comply. And as a result, he did die. Now, that's not intended to be cavalier. It's not intended to be insensitive in any way, but we always talk about this. Comply, don't die. Even if you don't like the fact that you are about to be taken to jail on a warrant, comply, and there will not be any physical force used, much less lethal force. But that's exactly what happened when Dante Wright decided he did not want to go to jail on the outstanding warrant. The story is very simple. Well, it's not very simple. It is simple in terms of what happened and what led to it. What is not simple is trying to figure out how the tragic mistake made by a police officer could have been made. But here's the bottom line, the thumbnail sketch version of this is. Man gets pulled over, 20-year-old gets pulled over for a traffic violation, is told to get out of the car. They run his plates. They run his plates and find what? Well, they find that he's got a warrant out for his arrest. He's got an outstanding warrant. When you have an outstanding warrant, guess what that means? You're going to be arrested on that warrant. So they ask him to put his hands behind his back. They ask him to be peaceful and just surrender himself. And instead, he pushes off, gets separation, jumps back in the car, tries to speed away. Officer in a panic pulls what she thinks or at least says she thought was her taser. And you have to kind of believe her because on the dash cam and body cam video, you hear her yelling, "Taser, taser, taser, I'm going to tase you." Then she fires her taser, except that it wasn't her taser. She had grabbed her gun. One shot later, he's dead. Of course, he actually sped away after that shot, and the car traveled several blocks before it smashed into another car, and he was dead. Terrible, terrible, tragic situation all around. Make no mistake about it, but I'm going to continue to say what needs to be said about this and about the reaction. Comply and don't die. There is one action that led to the death of Dante Wright, and that action was Dante Wright's. Dante Wright was being arrested peacefully for warrants, which, by the way, included a gun charge. So you knew that police, once they ran the plates and got the report on this guy, knew that there was a warrant that involved a gun charge and involved fleeing police and waving a pistol. They were probably on high alert already because, you know, the guy who was previously has a gun charge could very well have a gun on him. That's not why they pulled the gun. She said she pulled the gun because she didn't know it was a gun. She thought it was her taser and even yelled, "I'm going to tase you. I'm going to tase you." So terrible mistake by what I can only describe, quite frankly, as an incompetent police officer. But the entire situation escalated when one person made a decision. The decision was not to comply. The decision was not to surrender, be handcuffed, and deal with your legal matters in a court of law, and attempt to flee, resist arrest, evade capture, avoid detainment, and that is what it led to. Now, let's talk about the aftermath. What happened last night? The same thing that happened Sunday night. Apparently, the only well that BLM and Antifa know how to grieve is to burn and smash stuff. That's it. That's how they grieve. All right, they're not grieving. They're profiteering. They're engaging in rage. And they're profiteering. Burning, looting, assaulting, attacking, smashing, and stealing is apparently the way to respond to a situation that you don't like anymore, at least in inner city America. It is disgusting, it is reprehensible, and it must be condemned at every single turn. Now, they started this before they knew any of the facts of the situation. As a matter of fact, they still don't know all the facts of the situation, despite super transparency on the part of Brooklyn Center Police, which released the body cam video almost immediately. And rather than just looking at it and saying, "Man, she obviously didn't do this because he was black. She did this because she's clumsy and she grabbed the wrong thing off her belt," they just chose to advance the narrative of Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, killer cops, killing black people. Let's go steal stuff. Let's go attack cops. Let's throw bricks at cars. Let's fire industrial strength and size fireworks directly at the crowds of police officers protecting citizens and property. Let's attack, attack, attack. Now, There are a number of elements to this that I want to get in the first half hour of the program, so bear with me while I try to work through all of this. The one thing that should be called for in a situation like this is restraint. And restraint means telling everybody, calm down, let's have an investigation. Let's see what the investigation turns up. Let's find out the details before we react in ways that we might regret. It's something that I called for. I put it on Facebook yesterday, as a matter of fact. Normal, rational, conservative-minded people. Quote, wow, there was an officer-involved shooting at a traffic stop in Minneapolis. That's terrible. Can't wait to see what the investigation shows so we know what really happens. Leftists. And you'll excuse my language here, but bitch-ass cops shot another black dude. Hurls bricks and rocks at nearby police officers, attacks passing cars, sets cars on fire, smashes store windows, loots and steals high-end merchandise in peaceful protest. And that's the difference. Normal, rational people say, let's find out what happened and react after that. Non-normal, rational people, in other words, leftists, immediately use emotion. And they use their anger and their rage to guide their actions. And that is exactly what happened here. Now, I want to get to some of the reactions to this. The chief of police at Brooklyn Center, which is, again, a kind of suburban Minneapolis, Tim Gannon, told the authorities yesterday at a press conference very, very quickly and very, very transparently that what happened here was not an intentional shooting, but an accidental discharge.
As I watched the video and listened to the officer's commands, it is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I viewed and the officer's reaction in distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge.
The officer's reaction, by the way, and her name is Kimberly Potter, a 26-year veteran of the force. Very surprising. I thought it might be a rookie or another young officer because of the obviously very clumsy mistake that was made here. But her reaction after the shooting was, oh, my God. No, I'm sorry. She didn't say, oh, my God. She said, holy S, I shot him. She clearly was shocked to know that she shot him because she thought she had pulled her taser. We'll talk about that more in a moment. The mayor of Minneapolis didn't want to hear it. The mayor, I'm sorry, not Minneapolis, St. Paul. Obviously, this is all very close geographically. They're all the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, both very close to Brooklyn Center. The mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota, didn't want to hear about accidental discharges and tragic accidents. He wanted to play the race card. Of course he did.
We have to address some really hard questions. We have to address them in our police departments. We have to address them in our city halls. We have to address them in our state legislature. We have to ask ourselves, why, how does this keep happening over and over again in America, in the world, in Minnesota? We have to know that the first law of motion is that objects in motion will remain in motion until some force stops it from happening. And so when we recognize this strong, horrific trend that keeps happening over and over and over again, we have to know that Dante Wright will not be the last name, will not be the last hashtag on this list until and unless we take decisive and urgent action to ensure that he is.
Melvin Carter is the mayor of St. Paul. He's also completely and utterly wrong. It doesn't keep happening over and over and over again. Swift and decisive action does need to be taken, however. I'll give you details on both of those responses. Number one, do you know that there is, on average, about 1 million police and civilian contacts across all 50 states in the United States every year? Or every day, beg your pardon. Every day, 1 million times, whether it be on routine patrol, whether it be on responding to radio calls, whether it be stopping and questioning, police across this country interact with civilians about 1 million times a day. Do you know how many of those contacts with civilians result in use of force? 0.00021%. I've challenged some people online last night to say that number out loud. You probably can't. I can't. All I know is there's four zeros after the decimal point and a 2-1 at the end of that. Police use of force against civilians in general is exceedingly rare. That's point number one. And point number two is that swift and decisive actions that need to be taken by the suspect. When you are told you are being placed under arrest, make a swift and decisive action to surrender yourself. Don't fight, don't punch, don't push, don't flee, don't grab for a gun. Comply, don't die. It's literally just that simple. It is also not that, like, Dante Wright is the latest name in a long list of black people to die in police custody or in some confrontation with police. 400 white people are killed by police officers every year. Half that number killed by, black people rather, killed by police officers every year. 400 to 200. And if you say, yeah, but there are a lot more white people, so proportionately, there's still more black people who are killed by police. Yeah, that's true. But given violent crime statistics and the overwhelmingly disproportionate number of violent crimes committed by the black population, one would predict that the number of violent encounters leading to deaths would be extraordinarily much higher than that of the white population. This isn't about race, but they're turning it into race because race leads to rage. Rage leads to tearing down the system. Tearing down the system leads to the building of their goal, the Marxist state. More coming up on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay, 9:27. I want to get a couple of other quick notes in here. Geraldo Rivera is, we all know, is a far-left open borders advocate, an anti-cop advocate, who pretends to be conservative because he's a contributor on Fox News. He pretends on certain instances to be a contributor, but there are times, of course, when the veil is just completely pulled back. Now, I am loath to talk about Geraldo Rivera when I see him on television. I don't even like to listen to him on television because he hosts a radio show in this town on another station. But this piece of trash needs to be called out for what he is, and that is a race-baiting piece of trash.
Another traffic stop, Martha, another warrant, another dead black man at the hands of cops. I mean, at one point, you have to say to yourself, what the hell is going on here? It is, let's say it's a tragic accident. The gun was in the cop's hand. In Minnesota, under Minnesota law, if you shoot a person thinking you're shooting a deer, you're out hunting, that's involuntary manslaughter. Yeah. I think that the criminal track that Leo describes should take precedent here because that community needs to know that it's not open season on black men.
There is absolutely nothing, zero, nil, anything to suggest that race played any role in whatsoever in that tragic accident. Not when she yells, taser, 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 I'm going to tase you, and then screams after she realizes she fired her gun and not her taser, oh my God, I shot him. There's not open season, and race had nothing to do with it. Choices had something to do with it. The choice of a person being arrested on a warrant for a gun charge deciding to flee rather than being arrested and going to jail. That choice had something to do with it. But Geraldo Rivera likes to stoke anger in the community, just like he used to do on his ridiculous television show when he would put Holocaust survivor families on the stage with neo-Nazis and then be shocked and surprised when they tried to kill each other. Well, guess what? He's doing the same thing now, fomenting hatred and division in the streets by going on television and being an ass. Dan Bongino put him in his place.
See, you're doing the emotional thing again. You can't produce facts.
Do you think all of this rage, all of this rage, Black Lives Matter, you think that all this happened, defund the police, all this happened because of some fanciful liberal notion?
It didn't. It happened because
it would be nice if you could actually produce some data to back any of this up, rather than citing a Marxist group like Black Lives Matter, who calls out
what's your fact?
What's
your fact? What fact are you preaching about?
I just read on my show the other day a DOJ study where they actually interviewed victims, and the amount of police activity was proportional to the crime committed. It had nothing to do with the race at all. Those are facts. You should try them sometime, rather than trying to burn the country down with your racial rhetoric due to this tragic accident yesterday when you have no evidence to back it up.
Your whole routine is to attack me. Your whole routine is to attack me rather than dealing with the fact that black people are more fearful of cops than crooks.
Black people are not more fearful of cops. Only white, or in your case, Hispanic liberals like you advance that narrative. Do you know that 90% of the 911 calls that come in the city of Cleveland, 90% of the 911 calls requesting police come from black people? Because black people know that police are there to protect them, not harm them. 90% of the calls that come in for cops are from black people being victimized. They want the police around. They're not afraid of the police. Only people like Geraldo Rivera, this piece of trash that he is, are trying to convince you that black people hate and fear the police. Let's take a time out for news. We'll regather, and we're going to pivot to politics. There's a new face in the race for the United States Senate. I will talk to him next.
Hey, well, I'm a friendly stranger in the black sedan. Won't you hop inside my car?
9:36 now, we continue on AM 1420, The Answer. Appreciate you being with us. Let's listen a little bit.
Our country needs people who are willing to tell the truth, who are unafraid to stand up to the left and their cancel culture that's ripping our country apart. We need people who believe in America and are willing to fight for America. So I hope you'll join me. But I want you to know something ahead of time. This campaign isn't about slogans or sound bites. It's about hard work. Because you know what it's going to take to fix America. Hard work. I'm Mike Givens. I'm running for the U.S. Senate. Join me, and let's get to work.
That is the sound that I had been expecting to hear for the last couple of months, and that I'm very gratified to hear right now. Mike Givens has thrown his hat into the ring. It is a very, very crowded ring. We know that, and it just grew by one face, and Mike Givens made that announcement, actually produced that video earlier, was released this morning, as well as the announcement that he is indeed a candidate for Rob Portman's soon-to-be-vacated U.S. Senate seat, and he joins us right now to discuss why and what his vision for this country and for this state is. Mike Givens, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. You know I've been trying to talk to you for a while now as you kind of made up your mind as to whether or not you were going to make this run. And I know you kind of launched an exploratory, and I said, let's talk about that. You wanted to wait until you actually made your announcement, and that time has finally come. So let me ask, what went into the long decision process that that you entertained and that you went through that you know, that led you to this decision, Mike?
Well, I've been pretty blessed in my career, and I've spent a lot of long, hard days, and my five children are now out of the house. My last two sons are graduating from law school in May, and I thought, Mike, maybe it's time to take it a little easier, and I think my wife, Diane, who's always been supportive, said, you know, Mike, whatever you want to do. You know, I'm very disturbed with what's going on in this country, Bob. I think we all are that watch it closely. And I kind of waited to see who was going to get into this election. And frankly, if I would have found somebody that had the same ideology as I had, that had the same reasons for running as I had, I may have considered not running and supporting that candidate. And unfortunately, I haven't found that person. I believe we're in a precarious position as a nation right now, and I think that a lot of people are cowering under the force of the media that's so supportive of the left wing. And I think we've got to stand up to them. I think we have to confirm that we believe this is the greatest country in the history of the world, and that we have nothing to atone for or to apologize for. And I don't hear that as loudly being stated as loudly as I would like it to be stated. Mm-hmm. And I want to do just that. So,
Mike, I've had Josh Mandel on the air already, and I've had Jane Timken on the air, and I plan to talk to other candidates as well.
Sure.
I'm going to ask you about them, but first I just want to ask you more about you. You tried this once before in 2018.
Yes.
Different scenario. You had to, you were in a primary situation, obviously, and you were challenging Sherrod Brown, the right to challenge Sherrod Brown's seat so that we can flip a blue Senate seat to red, which is a lot tougher than replacing a Republican congressman who is not running again, like Rob Portman. I think there's an advantage there for that seat to already be red. Can you tell me what's going to be different about your campaign from 2018 to this time around, given again that you're looking at a different type of fight rather than trying to flip a blue seat, just trying to keep a red seat red and maybe make it a little more red with a little more conservatism?
Well, in the last campaign was precipitated largely by a meeting I had with a number of other CEOs from the Cleveland area with Sherrod Brown. And after sitting through that meeting, I said to myself, should this man really be representing the voters of Ohio? Frankly, I didn't agree with anything he said. His worldview is completely different than certainly mine and most of the people, particularly in business, that I know. And I just thought this man should not be representing Ohio. And that's what drove me. I started out with zero name recognition. In fact, my campaign said early on, they said, you have 1% name recognition. I said, it's got to be a mistake. They must know other Mike Gibbons is, because there's no way 1% of the people in Ohio know who I am. And that was about a little longer than six months before the primary. And I didn't know one county chair other than Cuyahoga County, and that particular county chair, who has since changed his mind, I might add, but he didn't want me to run. So nobody knew me. I'd never run for office before. And I had no experience in understanding how the election would go on. I went out and did what I've done my whole career and worked hard and met a lot of people. That work I've already done. I know people all over the state. I really enjoyed, the campaign itself. In fact, after the election was over, I said, I kind of like the campaign part. I'm not sure how I would have liked to go into Washington, but that was a lot of fun. We have great people in this state. We've got patriots in every county that really care about this country.
Mike, let me follow up on the name recognition part now, if I may,
yes.
Because, despite having that 1%, which may have been heavy, as you say, you won 38 out of Ohio's 88 counties in that primary, and you won 32%
right.
of the vote. That's pretty remarkable. Now that you have that experience and at least people know your name, maybe not in every corner of the state, but certainly winning 32 out of 88 counties as a complete unknown non-politician, businessman, and investment banker, they got to know a little bit more about you this time around. How much,
right.
How much do you think that'll help?
Well, I think it's going to help a lot. As I said, I know, I've met pretty much every chair in the state. I feel comfortable going everywhere. And, you talk about those out-of-the-way places. I love those out-of-the-way places. That's where I got a lot of votes. I did poorly in Cuyahoga County, and it was largely because, we started late. My campaign said, you've been in business for all these years in Cuyahoga County. People should know you. Well, they didn't. And, you're in a pretty closed environment when you do what I do. And yeah, the business community knew who I was, but the people that I care about getting the votes of didn't. And I think that's different this time. I've been out to Parma, Ohio, to the Republican Club, between these elections. And, when I was growing up in Parma, we didn't have one Republican. Well, we had one Republican out of all the kids in my eighth grade class, because we took a poll because Kennedy was running back then. Mm-hmm. And, that was a big thing. I went to a Catholic school in Parma. It was a big deal when John F. Kennedy won. That's all changed in Parma. We've seen, people, the average guy in Parma, which, we were part of that, they've, adopted Republicanism, and I think this is going on across the country. I think the people that grew up in the same socioeconomics level that I did are moving to the Republican Party. They don't like what they see. This focus on identity politics and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. They don't. And I'm going to talk about what the right thing to do here is for the state of Ohio and for the country. We're talking to Mike Gibbons, newly announced candidate for the United States Senate seat that is being vacated by Rob Portman. For those who don't know, Mike is an investment banker, entrepreneur, real estate developer. You said a few moments ago, Mike, that you considered not running a second time in this race. Yes. If you found the real conservative that you could get behind and support and help them win, and you haven't seen him yet. So I'm just going to throw some names out here and tell me, what you make of this field, and you can be as specific or as general as you want with each individual. But declared candidates are Josh Mandel, Jane Timken, and Bernie Moreno. Expected candidates include Mike Turner, and I may just stop there on that one. Questionable. There have been rumblings that these people may run. Representative Bill Johnson, J.D. Vance, Frank LaRose, Matt Dolan. These are some of the names that are out there. So you said you haven't found the real conservative yet. Are any of those individuals close to fitting that bill and just not quite what you need them to be?
Well, it's not that some of that group are not conservative. There, I think, certainly Josh Mandel. And I've supported Josh in the past. I supported him when he ran for treasurer. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that he believes in conservatism. But I also look at what you've done in your life before you've run and what your real motivations for running are. And, to me, this is not going to be a new career. This is, my going to Washington and trying to help, turn the country around so that I feel comfortable when I'm on my deathbed that my kids and my grandkids are going to have the same kind of opportunities I had. And, I'm very negative about people that just run for office and are good at running for office.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that you should know before you go into the U.S. Senate. I think, the business that I've done, my day-to-day activity for, many years was sitting down with highly educated, highly successful businessmen that effectively I had to sell on the idea that I knew what was best and could advise them in some of the largest transactions those companies would ever do. I gained their trust, and we executed on whatever transaction or whatever that company would want to do where we had an assignment. Those kinds of people are not easily convinced. Those people are going to listen. I sold intangibles. I did not do slogans. And I believe if you're going to go to the U.S. Senate, you're going to sit down with some pretty highly intelligent, accomplished people that you're going to have to gain their respect. And since I've been practicing doing that my entire career, I think I've got a pretty good handle on how to do it.
Mike, let me ask you about slogans, though, and about Donald Trump. Trump is all about slogans. America first. Trump train 2020, Trump train 2016. Make America great. All of those slogans were a huge part of how he was successful. Now, you served on his finance board, right? Co-chair of the Ohio Finance Committee for Donald Trump for president in 2016. We know that everybody is scrambling for the Trump endorsement. You know, Jane Timken was the chair of the ORP, which, of course, you know, Trump won Ohio by 8 points. Josh Mandel has said he's been Trump from the word go, and I'm not denying that he is. I'm sure a lot of people are. What role do you think that will play here? How important is that going to be in this primary?
I think it's very important. Donald Trump's very popular in this state. You just mentioned a couple of people, and I can tell you, I consider myself a gentleman. Mm-hmm. I will never attack any of my opponents personally, but the fact that these people are saying they were with Trump from the beginning is just not true. As I said, I love Josh. I think he's a great guy, but you know, I went to a couple of affairs for Marco Rubio, where I was invited by Josh, and I went because Josh asked me to. And I had not decided who was going to be, you know, our candidate and or my candidate. And the more I listened to Donald Trump, the more impressed I was. Now, he has an probably the oddest style I've ever seen. He was very successful. But, you know, that's not my style. But the Trump policies were spot on. I mean, what he accomplished in 4 years with the kind of obstacles he had set in front of him is nothing but amazing. And those policies need to be moved forward. You can see what's happening on our border. You can see kind of the different attitude toward China that we're seeing from the current administration. All these, you know, crazy executive orders that are being put in place just because Donald Trump stood for the opposite thing.
Right.
Things that are to the detriment of the country. And, I just think that we need to have somebody that is focused on the policy, not necessarily on the cult of personality that's kind of evolved. And we all realize that what Donald Trump did, what he said he was going to do, and what he did was what was good for America.
Yeah, I completely concur, and that's one of the reasons why he's still so popular here in the state of Ohio. Mike, we're just about out of time, but real fast, last question is about money. It's going to cost a lot of it to win this race. In fact, I hear rumblings of some forecasters are saying this could be a $70 million Senate race for one seat from the state of Ohio. That's the kind of numbers you used to talk about in presidential elections. How well healed are you going to be for this fight?
I've committed. I think if I can get through the primary, that this is going to be an important race on a national level, and there'll be assistance that you wouldn't normally get in the primary. I can finance the primary, and I'll do what it takes. Now, I made a mistake the last time, and my campaign people told me, Mike, you're making a mistake, and I wouldn't listen. I'm used to funding as dollars are needed, right? And they wanted me to put a lump sum in. I spent about $3.5 million in the last campaign, and nobody thought I was going to put that money in. And this time I'm going to put in an initial downstroke of $5 million. And all I can say is that, I believe we will raise a good bit of money, but if we need more, I'm capable of doing that.
You're in it a lot earlier this time around, you know, as you mentioned, just 6 months before the election. So you got plenty of time to generate a ground game and to generate donors and so on and so forth, which I know is why all of the names in that field that I just mentioned are getting in early, because they're going to have to raise a lot of money. It's going to be a battle. Mike Gibbons, Mike, I really appreciate you coming on. Obviously, we spoke at the Right to Life event, and so I kind of knew this was coming. I sat on it for a little while. It was hard. I kept wanting to say, you know, Mike Gibbons is going to run. But I sat on it, at your request.
Well, I wasn't sure I was going to run, Bob.
Well, I told Jane Timken when she came on last week that I want a true conservative in that seat. I did not believe Rob Portman was a true conservative, and there are some others that I do not believe are as well. I do believe you are one of them, one of maybe a few in this field, and so it's going to be very interesting to watch how this whole thing plays out, but I can tell you that I really appreciate you, and I really do believe you stand for what you say you stand for. And Mike, I'm sure we'll be talking a lot between now and primary time.
I hope we are. Thanks a lot, Bob, and thanks for having me. And
yes, sir.
Look forward to the next time. We'll
yes, sir.
You.
Best of luck to you. All right. 9:54, quick timeout, right back.
I can't let it slide.